This mix.
Yeah, listen up.
From above, top secret.
Jesus Christ.
.com. Featured interview.
Well, Dave, as you well know, there is a flurry of activity going on above Top Secret right now concerning a thread that was created by one of our members by the name of Downtown 436. The thread that he created is entitled Crazy Grid of Earthquakes. What? With a bunch of question marks back behind it. And what he has on there, of course, is he had listened to another radio program, Coast to Coast, AM, with George Norrie, and they were featuring Stan Deo and his interactive grid that he had made to show all the activity that's been going on in Nevada. Well, because it has created such a flurry of activity and replies and members wanting to know what's going on, we decided we would go straight to the source and try to get Stan on. And in a very short period of time, we were able to coerce Mr. Deo to come on our program. And so right now, let's welcome in Stan Deo. Hi, Stan.
Hi, guys. Can I take these handcuffs off now or what? I mean,
yeah. You can take the handcuffs off, but you have to leave the bra. Sorry.
And you can tell those two gentlemen standing behind you that they can leave now.
Yeah, tell them we were just kidding. What's going on, brother?
Oh, well, as you have rightly discerned on your message board, there's been a lot of activity after I made that announcement with Coast to Coast.
Wow.
We're getting information from all sorts of places, some of it that I can't quite release yet because they don't want it made public, but these are like civilians, not government.
Yeah.
There's activity there.
Before we actually have you start delving deeper into that subject, I want to give our members, because a lot of the, well, not a lot of them, but there are a number of members that are a tad bit skeptical, well, coming from a conspiracy site, would you expect anything less, of what your background is and why we should actually be paying any attention to you, Stan. So if you would, just briefly, tell us a little bit about your background, how you got started in researching seismic activity, and how you even got hooked up with the FMNOC, which is the Fleet Numerical Meteorology and Oceanography Center.
Well, you said that without a pause. That's great.
Yeah, and with breath, too.
All right. Well, back in 1995, that long name, the Fleet Numerical name, is shortened to FNMOC, F-N-M-O-C. The FNMOC started putting up a sea surface temperature anomaly map, which is the deviation that today's sea surface temperature makes from, say, a 30-day average before that, so that you can see the rapid or slow deviation from normal ocean temperatures in various spots. Now, they had their own reason for doing that, and they were taking satellite data and submarine data, data from buoys all over the Pacific and various other oceans. So they were putting all that together into their Cray computer there in Monterey, California, digesting it and coming up with this beautiful high-resolution map in color. I saw that and thought, well, what a neat map. And just from a graphic point of view, I thought, boy, this is really pretty, and I stored a few of them. And I thought, what happened if I were to geographically subtract one map from the other and just see the change of anomaly over a day? And so I did that, and it produced a different kind of map. And I thought, that's interesting, I guess. And I did that a couple of days and stored it on my desktop and forgot about it. Then a couple of days went by, and there was some earthquakes somewhere around the Pacific at that time, and I thought, gee, I wonder if those were close to any of those sea surface temperature anomalies. So I pulled up those maps I'd made, showing the deviation, and goodness gracious, a number of them, like three-quarters of them, were right where these odd patterns formed when I subtracted the two maps. And so I got more serious about it and started compiling the data every day, twice a day, when the FNMOC would release their maps, one in the morning, one in the evening, 12 hours apart. And the data started to stack up, and it was looking really good. Like about 70% of the time, I could see and forecast within 6 hours to 5, 6, 7 days. Sometimes it would delay major earthquakes along the fault line. And then it became along a lot of fault lines because I was doing it on a global basis. So Art Bell, my brother, lived in Washington State at the time and still does, and he rang me and said, you ought to tell the Art Bell show about this. And I was living in Perth, Australia. I thought, right, okay, well, I'll tell him. I sent an email, and got a call from Art Bell, and he said, hey, look, we'd be very interested in talking about this, and that's when it started. So then for 10 years, off and on, when I would see something rather spectacular forming, especially like the recent one that was down in Indonesia, that Richter 9 that made the tsunami, I would go on the show and say, look, let me put my neck on the line again. It looks like we're going to have a big one. Now, I'm not a seismologist. I am an amateur who has spent a great deal of time studying all this and developing a new kind of seismic forecasting technique that only works over water bodies that are over fault lines or potential earthquakes or even volcanoes. And what I do is when I subtract those maps, I'm actually getting the rate of change of the temperature on both sides of a fault line. And one side will cool while the other side heats up, showing a current flow in the water and the atmosphere above it just before an earthquake occurs. Now, since I started that, the Japanese have started studying, and a number of other people have started studying it. I can't do it any longer because I don't have access to the data. The Navy stopped that. But and it's just because, according to them, they changed satellites and didn't write new programs for the new Cray computer to handle this report, and they're not making it available. And they certainly are not making their own data available there for their sea surface temperature anomaly maps. They're now using some other organization's maps and not theirs. So it might be the straight skinny from them, but I've never been able to replace my data source to continue that. And I, quite honestly, I don't watch earthquakes that much anymore unless something unusual happens, like this this flurry. So I don't claim to be a seismologist, just a very interested amateur taking, you know, a scientific approach to the data that I have available.
Right.
Trying to make sense of it.
All right, well, let me ask you this. I mean, there's a lot of activity going on in Nevada, Stan. I mean, in all your experience, have you seen anything like this before that maybe you were aware of that is maybe similar to the events that's going on in Nevada right now?
Well, first of all, let's divide it into two parts. There's the grid anomaly showing earthquakes appearing on a 19-point grid and then some in between. That's one side. And then the other is a flurry of earthquakes there in Nevada at that location. Now, never have I ever seen the gridded earthquake dots like that appear on the published USGS reports. I've generated those kind of things in my own mapping techniques when I do snap grid alignments of earthquakes to pull it to the nearest lat-long grid intersection, but never have I seen them published like that. And as far as what we've seen at the Reno quakes, I look all over the planet on Google Earth data feeds from USGS, and there are no other clusters or flurries of quakes that show gridded dot epicenters like that. No others except there. Now, I checked back for 35 years on the USGS data today, trying to see if there were any other earthquakes that occurred at that location or even in a circle around it, up to 9 miles around it, in Mogul, like this. And there has never been a swarm or grouping of quakes like this in that area in the history of record keeping at USGS. This is unusual.
Right.
It is unusual because they are, majority of them, shallow. Now, I, as a scientist, I tried to look at the data that might have produced those graphic dots and try to see, was it possible that somehow or another some of the data coming from USGS over to Google Earth had been truncated or rounded off to the nearest hundredth of a grid point. If that had happened, it would have forced earthquakes occurring around those grid points to just default to that grid point and not be exactly where they're located, and that would create this gridded appearance. So then I started looking at the details, the actual data, and that theory didn't work too well because, let's say, the latitude lines could have been defaulted to a hundredth. I can see where that could have happened, but at the same time, they didn't default the longitude to a thousandth, which meant that it was skewed. Somehow or another, their data is weird. I can't fault it one way or the other. It's still the court's still out about why it's gridding like that.
I have a quick sidebar if I can here real quick, Stan. Normally,
right,
when you have seismic activity, you have yourself a fairly large shattering shake of events that happen, and then a sequence of smaller events that seem to tremble downward. what we're hearing is that this is almost the opposite. And is your data kind of pointing towards that also?
Yes. The quake data I'm using is the USGS data, and it's showing the exact opposite of a normal quake. These are precursor quakes rather than aftershocks. They're getting stronger and stronger in intensity. Radio station KOLO-TV in Reno, I believe it is, interviewed the head of the University of Nevada, Reno. He's a head seismologist. I think Dr. Anderson was his name. He said that the residents could expect a Richter 6, that it was not over yet. Now, he then went on to another show after that and recanted having said that, but we kind of expected that was probably pressure from the... Yeah, he got chastised pretty hard by his job probably over that. I've said in an update I've sent around, I guess, to you too, that if it were me living there in that mogul area in Reno or whatever, I would move.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, I'm sure that helps real estate values, but I quite honestly see enough danger signals there, and when the pros come out that are really trained in this and tell me, I'm not thinking just a Richter 6, I'm thinking, you know, from other data we've gotten that we're looking at magma movements under there, that could be a new volcanic pit right there where Mogul is. That golf course could go into orbit one of these days, so I'm not moving there.
Wow.
All right, well, I want to have some edification here before I ask you this next question. What is a caldera?
Caldera is a large area in the surface of the Earth. It is usually close to a fracture or fault zone that is deep in the Earth and has had a number of large volcanoes over a period of time, and basically so many of them that it's kind of ringed by a ridge, a major ridge, but inside that are numerous large volcanoes that have erupted over time, and they're usually very big, like the crater or the Mono Lake caldera.
Okay, are any of the quakes that we've been talking about so far on this show, do they fall anywhere near any potential caldera?
Well, calderas do tend to form over long periods of time, but let us say that the Lake Tahoe area was once a caldera. Volcanic activity there in great amount, and that was a long time ago. Now, of course, it's covered with water. But that same fault line underneath that runs right up about 18 miles and suddenly appears again and passes by Mogul, or Mogul Verde, where all the earthquakes are right now that we're talking about.
Right.
Now, there was a lady that emailed us before went on coast, or sorry, just after went on coast, and she lived in North Shore of Lake Tahoe in Griff. And she went up to the shops that day, and they were all complaining about the strong sulfur smell in the lake,
right?
You know, coming in. Now, that's not a good thing, normally, unless somebody's dumped rotten egg out there, but I doubt it.
As a matter of fact, that was going to be one of the next questions I was going to try to move to. We've also been hearing, although we haven't been able to corroborate and figure out whether or not these are true statements or not, but we have heard certain folks from the Lake Tahoe area complaining about the smell of sulfur. Why don't you tell our members and our listeners alike why we should be concerned about a sulfurous smell coming from a lake such as Lake Tahoe?
Well, in this case, because it's got a volcanic history in that area, I would say that it's indicative of magma moving very close to the surface and venting out into the atmosphere. You'll get two kinds, either carbon dioxide or the sulfur dioxide or various sulfurous gases coming, depending on whether you've got a volcano about to erupt or whether you've got magma moving and it's venting. And there can be so much of the gases come out at one time, depending on which situation you're looking at, that a large cloud, say, of carbon dioxide gas can come up, cool rapidly, and it's heavier than air, and spread over the landscape and kill anything that breathes air there. And this has happened in Africa, and it's happened with buffalo herds, I think, in Yellowstone. So to smell the sulfur is not good. This is magma moving too close to the surface, and it has been a published fact for, 10, 12 years at least, that magma along the Cascade Range has been moving to within a mile of the surface, and to me that's too close. Now, when you smell it at Lake Tahoe and you get all these little quakes up there at Mogul only 18 miles away, it starts, and right next to the same fault line connecting to Lake Tahoe, it starts to tell me that we may be looking at some major movements of the edge of the tectonic plate that California, Nevada, Idaho, Washington, Oregon sit on.
So is this like an early warning alert that they should be getting the hell out of Dodge?
Well, let me say this. I would not live there. If my family lived there, I wouldn't tell them to move.
That makes twice you've said that, Stan.
That's a non-denial denial, isn't it, Stan?
Say again?
Don't want to throw any panic in the air, but you wouldn't live there, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's see. There you go.
Well, look, I mean, if you couple this with, 4 or 5 months back, we had 600 quakes offshore of Oregon, and even now we're having some significant quakes in the lower portion of the Juan de Fuca plate that connects to the Mendocino Fault, which runs all the way down into, darn near to the Baja. It becomes the San Andreas Fault. When you put these things together, and down in Chile, where they've had a volcano that's erupting right now and throwing, I mean, it's a huge volcano, these show that the eastern side of the Ring of Fire, the Pacific Plate, is active. And Holly was just telling me that volcano there in Chile has not erupted like that in 2,000 years. So this is a recent awakening of a dormant volcano. And there are a lot more of them all the way up into Vancouver. So, I think we're looking at something that's precursor of perhaps stuff like Gordon Michael Sky have talked about, and other seers that have, Edgar Cayce, that have talked about terrible happenings on our West Coast.
Yeah.
Lori Toy map. I mean, there's just lots of people. The Hopi Indians have told us about it. In fact, we were their guests that invited down to the Hopi Nation to talk to their elders about it. The time is here. They're expecting it as well.
Well, you know, we have a sulfur smell that comes out of Texas, but it's down at the Crawford Ranch. Ba-ba-boom.
After barbecue and bean party.
Barbecue and beans, baby. There's a huge sulfur smell down there.
Anytime Cheney's there.
Blazing
saddles. Yeah, blazing something. Blazing buttocks, I think, is what they call here in Texas. So let's move to some member questions. Plucky Nunes.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. And of course, I blew
my
own.
See, it's okay for Dave and I to laugh at him.
Yeah. We work with these folks. Anyway, Plucky has a question, and it's a two-parter. How long before the continent fractures, and is Gordon Michael Scallion, his future map, the real deal?
Okay. As far as how long it is before we see the continental fractures, I think that will be over a period of weeks, months, and even several years, and in stages. But I think we're seeing the beginning of it now, and I expect this year to start seeing some real activity increasing toward, 2012, 13 at the estimated peak of the 24 solar sunspot cycle, which tends to bring up a lot of activity in the crustal movement. So I think that's starting now, and it will intensify but go on for months and years. In fact, probably even past that solar sunspot maximum, but we'll see painful parts of it now. And I think Gordon Michael Scallion's map is probably fairly what I would expect if we get the West Coast fractures releasing and if the tectonic plate slips over the other. What has got me a little bit concerned or confused, I suppose a better word, is that the Hopi told us when I was standing at the edge of the second mesa, they took me out the edge and said, look down into the desert floor. We will be communicating between the three mesas of the Hopi Nation by canoe and boat before we move out of here. Now, they're at an altitude of over 5,000 feet there.
Wow.
So, and that's in just close to where the Grand Canyon is. Now, the Grand Canyon, by the way, was formed by a huge, huge, huge volcanic eruption that threw ash everywhere over multiple eruptions, and when it did, it had a lot of moisture in it, and the ash moisture collected and sank and then chewed a hole through the ash bed, which was still very malleable at that time, and that formed the Grand Canyon, or a great portion of it anyway, and that's of course right where the Hopi Nation is. So for that to happen, there has got to be more than just a fracture occur. There's got to be a dropping down of northern Arizona there, northwestern Arizona. And I've tried for the life of me to see how that would fit in Gordon Michael's map, and they do tend to agree just by looking at altitudes, but we would have to drop that sector of the United States down. The rest of it, as far as up to New Madrid, up the center of the United States, and then the coastal Florida intrusions and all that kind of stuff, you know, if you just take an altitude map and raise sea levels, you're going to get that. And I think we will see sea levels rise. But what a lot of scientists are not taking into consideration when they look at sea level rise is this. They're looking at, okay, let's melt the ice at the poles, that it's over land, especially at the South Pole. Let's melt that ice and put it into the ocean. How much water will we get out of that, and how can it raise the sea level? And there are none of them, as far as I can find, considering the water shell that is underneath the earth, underneath the ocean floors, down in the Moho discontinuity. It has a specific density of 3.4. It's high temperature, and it is venting all the time into the many, many smokers we have under the ocean floors, you know, like over 1,000, maybe 1,500 of them. And if the core of the earth gets hot, say from electromagnetic conduction from the solar wind or from a direct hit from a halo corona, like a coronal mass ejection from the sun, if something causes the planet to heat up, maybe a deep impact meteor somewhere, the core will expand again, and it will press out this water through all these smoker vents that are already there. It'll erupt and flood the seas again for a period of time, and then it'll come back as the core cools off. So I'm concerned about that being a real problem, and that could certainly make the sea level rise more than we thought, and make more of Gordon Michael Scallion's map real. So,
interesting.
How he got it, you know, I can't explain. I've talked to Gordon Michael, and you know, he had a real interesting life story, and so because I've seen things myself and dream visions ahead of time, I can't deny that it's possible that what he's done is correct.
Interesting. The original thread starter at AboveTopSecret.com by the name of Downtown436 had a number of questions for you, Stan, but you've already answered a few of them, so I will just skip down to his last two, which is, do you see this as a precursor to any kind of future event, and what do you think would be able to cause this kind of anomaly, which you kind of already alluded to here just recently?
Yeah, I think I've probably, and I do think that it is precursor of probably volcanic activity and certainly more seismic activity all along that Lake Tahoe area and north of there. And that's what I think it is. It is precursor.
Antar has a question, and here again, you're answering so many things. You know, the thing I love about you, Stan, is we can ask you one question and you answer 15. So we'll pass on some of the things she said, but she does have an interesting question, and it's about the New Madras Fault. Could these eruptions that we're experiencing in the Nevada area or whatever, could they also cause problems in the entire Midwest?
Well, she's talking about the New Madrid Fault Line.
Right.
The last time that runs up the Mississippi line and over toward the Ohio River and a little bit left up toward the Missouri at St. Louis where they all join. That is a weak point in the continental United States, in the plate we float on. Now, what she's asking, the simple answer, short answer would be yes. Eruptions and major quakes along the, I'm talking about big quakes now, like a Richter 9 and the new Juan de Fuca plate, that could connect from what we've seen straight across and affect activity in the New Madrid and cause it to trigger if it's already ready to go. And certainly there are signs of this with the small quake patterns have been occurring there, and also the USGS and various emergency services have been holding courses now for over 6 months in the area, all along the states there, showing them how to deal with a major earthquake and how to reestablish communication power and all that kind of stuff. So we know that something is building there. And if there's a big enough shock over on the West Coast or the East Coast, the New Madrid will probably trigger and release a Richter 7 to 8 earthquake like it did the last time in the 1800s.
Wow.
Now, there is a gravitational anomaly that sits up near Greenland, northeast of New York. It's way up high. And it is a gravitational anomaly very similar to the one that sits next to Indonesia where that large Richter 9 occurred. And there's only two spots on the planet that are like this, and one of them is up in the northeast, the northwest Atlantic. Now, that is putting gravitational pressure on the plate east of the New Madrid fault line. And we're starting to see little earthquakes start to appear in New York and various places. In fact, there's a major quake fault line that runs right through Manhattan Island there. So, all those areas are subject to change very soon. So, whether it's west or east coast, I would say to Antar that the New Madrid is a bad area to be living as well.
Hmm.
Well, the way you describe it, and this isn't a sidebar, it's just an observation, but the way you describe it, Stan, I mean, you know, there's very few places really that I am going to do a sidebar. I know John's going, oh, God, another sidebar. But I'm going to do a sidebar. Do you think that the global warming has anything to do with all this stuff that's going on? Or is that too far-fetched to even try to together?
I'm just trying to figure out how to answer that.
To where we would understand it.
Well, the two are connected. I have seen twice over the 10-year period that I was having access to the naval data for the from the FINMOC for sea surface temperature. I've seen twice two coronal mass ejections, two halo plasma ejections from the sun graze or hit us fairly directly. And each time, when it hit the Earth's magnetic field, the magnetopause, it induced electrical currents heavy currents down inside the Earth, which produced bouncing balls of heat, which hit one ocean and then bounced across into to the Atlantic in the space of 24 hours, and then it disappeared as far as appearing on the surface temperature maps, both times. Now, that's telling us that it is possible for the sun's activity to produce an input of heat by electromagnetism into our magnetic field to produce heat in our oceans, and which translates to our atmosphere and hence to the global warming. But that's a minor, like, blip on the radar for the period of time we're talking about as far as global warming. What is more important is that in 1999, I believe it was, the sun started emitting two new narrow bandwidths of spectral emissions from the sun in the ultraviolet spectrum. Now, they aren't, as far as we know, cancer-producing spectra coming at us, but they started affecting the growth of plankton in other small marine organisms, I mean very small, in the oceans. And a doctor, I just can't recall his name, but in Arizona at the Solar Observatory, there was a doctor who did a paper on these plankton and what wavelengths they were absorbing, and they were heating up the oceans. And they were multiplying rapidly because of this wavelength they were absorbing. Now, heating up the oceans adds to global warming in a big way, because it absorbs a lot of the sunlight that would normally have reflected off in what's called our planetary albedo. So, yes, these can be connected, because with the increase in temperature in the planet and the violent storms and the distribution of electricity, it affects the telluric earth currents, which are subsurface electrical currents which affect cloud movements. And these large current movements are also known to be affiliated at times with seismic activity. So, yes, I think the two can interact in probably a lot more ways than I'm saying here, but that's a question I haven't had time to properly absorb and answer, but that's my first response to it.
After listening to what you were just saying, I was just curious. I read some data here in the past couple of years that supposedly scientists had also concluded that our Earth was wobbling more. Could that also be a scenario that affects how everything is working within our Earth in regards to earthquakes?
There was some little wobble article, gosh, a year or two back. I remember reading something about it. We have a number of things affecting the wobble. We have Chandler's wobble, which is a major axis wobble, and then there are several sub-wobbles that they may be caused by too many factors, like, you know, the molten magma and the mountains that extend down underground into the molten magma, which is these are cool parts of the magma. These are gravitational anomalies, and there are a number of things that are so hard for me to even put together in my mind because I don't have enough data. But they're just we do have a number of wobbles. And
okay.
At one point, the wandering of the North Pole, the real North Pole, stopped either late last year or this year. It stopped for several weeks, which is quite unusual, and then the wandering of the North Pole began again. And this is like watching a top you put on the floor kind of thinking about stopping, and then all of a sudden it does a strange movement and straightens up, and then it tries to fall again. And this is what I think we're seeing. But as to the causal mechanisms, I think they are so many and interacting that I can't give an intelligent answer any more than that.
There is a member that, I guess it's pronounced like prima donna, but prima materia, several different things, but I'm just going to pick the thing out that I think is the most interesting of the questions. I think, if I'm not mistaken, John, this is a guy that put the photo up of the boar thing?
Yes.
Okay. It was a really neat picture. John and I looked at it earlier, Stan, and it was one of these things that actually bore the holes, you know, for the caves and whatever. And it looks like it's about 60 feet high, or at least that's what John and I guessed, which is huge. So Prima Materia's question is, do tunnel boring machines have a seismic fingerprint? In other words, what he's saying is there an identifiable type of vibration pattern to these machines? And could these machines possibly produce the seismic anomalies that you've described before?
Well, yes, there is I'm sure there is a definite fingerprint for them. The reason I say that is that these tunnel boring machines do turn rather slowly compared to a number of things, and they produce a hum or a vibration when they chew into various types of strata. We had a friend of ours down in Tucson. She was writing to us about a problem she'd had in her bedroom. She was, her bed would start to vibrate at night and then move clear across the room by morning.
I saw that movie.
Yeah, it wasn't an Omen movie, but
yeah, is that the broad where her head turns around and she spews out green stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this wasn't her, but yeah, okay. I understand. Now, what had happened is the lady said she heard this hum, and the neighbor did too, but her house was the one where the bed moved, and then it was there for a few days, and then it passed. Now, these tunnel boring machines will produce vibrations in the strata, and it will travel sometimes for miles and then reflect back on itself and come up as a hot spot, like underneath somebody's house, even miles away from where it's being done. Here where we are in Colorado, we're in Pueblo West, about 40 miles south of Fort Carson, I think it is. Anyway, we're south of this army base, and they are shooting mortars and tank rounds and blowing up things. They're frequently getting ready for war, and when they do, they blow up, they make sound waves that hit, or vibrations that hit a layer of shale that comes right into our basement here.
Wow.
And so of course the dishes jar and stuff, and the cups and things, when they put the big ones on, we hear them and feel them. The whole house shakes.
I bet that ticks Holly off, doesn't it?
Well,
I mean, her china's, shaking everywhere. God, that's
going to
make her mad.
Well, it's dust settling, and it disturbs the dogs, and it is a distraction. Sometimes at night when it happens, it'll wake you up. It's kaboom, a thud like that. But anyway, back to the discussion. You guys say you've got a picture there of one that looks like 60 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of a white one? Is it white?
I believe this one was yellow.
Yeah, kind of yellow looking, Sam.
Okay, well, I've seen some yellow ones that the Air Force have. They're only 30 feet in diameter. The Germans have one that published a paper on a few years back. It's 42 feet in diameter. But let's put that into perspective. What we're talking about is, at a minimum, 30 feet, and perhaps at a maximum, what you've estimated, 60 feet. We're talking 3 to 6 stories in diameter.
Golly,
and it chews a hole through whatever it's going through.
Right.
Now, basically what they do is, of course, they turn and they chew the rock in a donut shape, and leave the hole in the middle is where all the stuff they've cut falls down onto a conveyor belt and is carried out to a train track and then away to wherever they're dumping the stuff. But that is huge. And when you're doing that, you are going to make a hum probably in the frequency range of, I'd say, 200 cycles per second or lower. But it's not going to be strong enough to trigger the earthquake monitors normally. You would have to have some sort of seismic surface sensing that's tuned to, you know, to pick up that kind of a vibration. I'm sure you could probably make one as an amateur. And you listen for that hum coming from the ground, and if you had two or three stations like that, you could triangulate the depth and the location of it. So it is possible to track them, but at this point in time, I think it's why bother? Because if we're tracking where these underground tunnels are being put, they're being put there for security reasons, ostensibly for the defense of the country, but I'm sure they use it for other reasons. But we'd be cutting our nose off to spite our face if we go and pinpoint all these locations and say openly to the public, here's a secret tunnel, you know, because the enemy reads our briefs too.
Yeah, sure. We're all going to be hiding here, so no guns.
Yeah, you know what used to really annoy me? My jaw would drop watching Gulf War 1 and 2 when you would get an announcer coming on saying, I'm here in the battleground, and we're fixing to make a sneak attack.
I think his name was Geraldo, wasn't it?
That's the guy.
what an idiot. I couldn't believe that they did that. Yeah, we're right outside the military complex, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. He got fired for that, didn't he?
Well, he and a bunch of others should have.
I mean, how asinine is that, Stan? Jeez.
Oh, look, I weep when I see that stuff, because a battle commander sitting here and a press guy is blowing his whole deal. And when they make this, this is a secret attack. We're going to surprise them, and we're alive here. And I'm thinking, boy, this is madness.
I know. You're on the same wavelength that John and I are. Yeah, it's just crazy. It really is.
We have time for maybe just a couple of more questions. And E-Roz asked this question. What sort of energy, Stan, is needed to create an earthquake like the sizes that are on the grid? And do you know who, for what reason, they might be creating these earthquakes? And he may, or she, may be alluding also to possible scalar weapons being used.
Well, okay, if it's scalar weapons, I would think it would probably be Russia, or Russia and China combined. They're the only two powers that I think that are in cahoots together that have this technology. And they would have to be cooperating to target properly, because if we were doing the same thing with HARP or some equivalent facility or satellite basis systems, we would have to know what they are doing several days or weeks in advance so that we can counter their long wave build up at the same time. These scalar waves take a little bit of time to build up their effect, and you can screw that up if you can detect that they're where they're coming from and where they're headed, and you can generate your own to counteract them. This is kind of why I don't trust scalar wave weaponry too much. Unless they knock out our systems, then they can go crazy with it. Otherwise, they're doing a scalar wave in the surface of the Earth itself, which we have. There's a way we think to do that using ground-based systems and small kiloton yield nuclear devices placed at specific locations and detonated over a series of hours or days or weeks even to produce long wave vibrations around the Earth that focus to a certain point. And those are kind of hard to counteract. Now, that might be more the type of weapon that is being used. But I don't know why it would produce a grid pattern like this. I still keep coming back to the fact that the data itself has somehow been skewed from the seismometers in the area. We do know that there are portable seismometers been put in by USGS in the backyards of a number of people living there in Mogul, because we've gotten emails from them. And these may round off to the hundredth. But as I said, what bothers me is they're rounding off only half of the data that they're sending to the hundredth that they're doing that. And it just doesn't... There's something wrong with the data, and that will create that grid pattern if data is snapped to the nearest grid point for some reason. And why they would snap to those grid points at the hundredth, I don't know. And so the kind of energy needed to create earthquakes of the Richter 1 and 2s, I used to watch them when we had a European station monitoring the planet that we were able to use or access our data. And, a TNT blast, we could see a Richter 1 in mining operations. So it's not a lot of energy or firepower needed, and you could do it with non-nuclear sources with conventional explosives if you wanted to. So those grids, I mean, why, you know, you have to ask yourself, okay, if someone detonated something underground on those grid points, why did it keep going and going and going and going and increasing? You see, that's not
right.
One explosion, but a bunch of them in the same spot. So that doesn't make sense. If it were an external source doing it, it would hit and go. And so the only other thing I can think of is some structures underneath there that have elasticity that are bouncing up and down and producing that, like springs, if you like large springs. And that doesn't make sense, really. I mean, that's... So I think we're seeing the pattern is... The grid pattern is an artifact of the data recording and transmission. But the earthquakes are not an artifact. They are real. And that does concern me, especially since they're so shallow. So...
Okay.
There.
Well, we got one last question that we're going to do, just and if you don't mind. And this is from BuffTopSecret.com member Spaced Out.
Right.
And Spaced Out is talking about the happenings that are happening around what is called the Truckee Meadows. And for those that don't know, it's a basin, an old floodplain, if you will. And he's saying, really, or he or she, at the end of the last ice age, ice dams were formed repeatedly upstream near Donner Lake, which is where the Truckee River originates. Over these ice dams that were formed, whatever sediment into the Truckee Meadows happened, rounding boulders and sand, which are the current evidence of the violent past of this area. And we're talking about 11,000 years ago. So the question is, could these quakes simply be the result of Truckee Meadows settling, Stan, or is the population increasing, the water table being affected, lots of new buildings, or is it just the sediment plain just sinking and snapping around the edges?
Well, I will preface it by again saying I'm not a formally trained geologist or seismologist, but I am aware that there's a lot of sediment in that area from the past. You can look at the geological maps of the area and see that. If the sediment is sinking, and this is what is causing it, you would then have to ask, why is it sinking? It's not just simply eroding away. The ice dams that came down through there may have at one time put a lot of stress on the area and been part of what caused the rift or the fault line to form just, you know, 18 miles or so west of Mogul, next to Reno there. I would have to do some study on that and look at data to see what the correlation might be. I had not gone to that stage. I had looked at the older stuff, the older volcanic activity at Tahoe and up that area, and had not considered what the ice dams might have done. But I would think if it were sinking that we would see this all around the sediment plain, all on all sides of it, not just the western side. So that's my first thoughts on it, and I apologize, Spaced Out. I don't know more than that at this point.
I think one of the reasons why Spaced Out is very concerned is because he's living right there real close to the epicenter.
Oh.
So he has a little more concern about the area.
Spaced Out, I wouldn't live there.
That's the third time we've heard Stan say this, people.
How about Dallas, Stan? Or am I okay here in Dallas?
Yeah, oh. You're probably going to have more problem with border crossings and things, but south of Austin, you might have...
Border crossings? Oh, okay, very
well,
good.
Dave generally has always enjoyed a south-of-the-border meal, so...
Hey, listen, Stanley, when you and Holly come, if you ever come to Texas, I want you to be sure and call me. Johnny can fly in with a cheap airfare now because of the gas prices.
With margaritas in my hand.
Yeah,
we'll
treat you to some real Tex-Mex up here. We're not talking about the Crawford Ranch Tex-Mex. We're talking about, you know, the Dave Rabbit Tex-Mex.
Well, that seems to be the sign to go upstairs. You hear that?
Yeah, Sasquatch.
I hear that.
I think they saw a Sasquatch out at the back door.
I hear that. So I'll tell you what, Stan. what we'll let you do, Stan,
hey, listen,
here.
Listen, listen. Does this tell you something? One of our dogs is named Seismo.
Oh boy!
Is the other name Graph? Seismograph?
Well, listen. When he starts to get all weirded out, I say he's my seismograph. We better hang on.
There you go.
Tell Holly to grab the dishes in.
Your website is located at www.standeo.com. Correct?
Yes, sir.
Tell everybody about this great book
that you and Holly did a while back.
Well, that great book that Holly did, I kind of only did the cover. She wrote the book, and the book is called Dare to Prepare, and it's about 544 pages long, 8.5 inches by 11, and it's not large print. It's packed with stuff.
Are there any pictures in it? Because you know I don't read, right?
It's got lots of pictures, about 250 pictures.
Oh, you might even still survive, Dave.
I want a copy of them.
And in fact, the front cover, the pictures on there tell you why you should prepare. The major reasons that you're going to die early.
Oh, well, great. That's always a nice page turner then.
Listen, I'll tell you what, since the last... Oh, this year has been absolutely phenomenal, getting increasing every month. People are buying that book so fast that we are having trouble keeping the printing up.
Wow. Really?
That's no kidding.
Wow.
So the concern out there is real, and we're not promoting it or anything like that. It's just grassroots word of mouth, and people are really getting concerned.
Give her our congratulations, though, Stan. I mean, just kudos big time from the Johninator and myself for how great the book is going for you guys.
I'd be real remiss if I didn't ask this, and I know you squirm every time I do. How's HAL Orbital Laboratory thing going on there?
Oh, Halo.
Halo.
Well, I just finished the last part of the avionics integration into the shell. And we'll start production on it next week, and we hope that after that to be 4 to 6 weeks to have a test flight.
Can I send you my money order now?
You know, I don't know what we're going to do with that. You're not the only one. I mean, we've had a lot of people, actually. Some went ahead and just sent thousands in advance, which we've turned back to them. But I don't know how we're going to release this to the public without a major cash infusion, because
right.
To beat the Chinese is our big problem.
I know that was a big concern of yours, yeah.
Yeah, we have to make a lot of whatever we're going to make, hide it in a warehouse somewhere, get on everybody's radio program the same day and say, okay, we've got it, we'll take orders for today, and order now or don't get one,
right?
So that we can sell everything we've got in inventory before the Chinese come and copycat us and break us. You know, they'll kill us. So.
Right.
That's our problem. We're really trying to figure out clever ways to do it and stay in business.
Well, you saw the report that was in the Wall Street Journal, didn't you?
Which one was that?
They found that one Chinese guy that's making all that stuff. It's just some old 78-year-old guy that's sitting in a room somewhere, and they bring him something, and he analyzes it, and he figures out how to do it cheap.
You're joking.
Yeah, I am joking.
He has to be.
Sorry. I'm sorry. You guys were going I know, but you guys were going analytical on me, and I had to throw a little bit of sidebar in there.
Yeah, you were talking about who flung dung, I know.
Oh!
Who
flung dung? But I love bomb! Oh, Stan! Yeah!
Yeah, we used to call it golf claps, but we don't call it golf claps anymore because I think golf sucks. But kudos, that was a great one. Who slung dung? I love that. You and I need to be partners on some shows, Stan.
We'd get in trouble. They'd arrest us.
Oh, Johnny, he's biting his nails constantly.
I'd be bailing you guys out every other day.
All right,
Stan.
Give our best to Holly, man.
All right.
All right, thanks, Stan.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Bye, Dave. Bye.
Take care.
So there you have it. Stan the man. You know, he said it three times that he wouldn't have anything to do with Nevada. So what does that tell you, Dave?
Well, I won't be seeing my rendition of Viva Las Vegas because I ain't going there, baby puppy. You know, I mean, let it suck down all the sinners. I know, but this was a heavy show. I mean, I was, you know, on pins and needles listening to everything that Stan says, which we always do. We interview this guy. But I mean, it's pretty heavy stuff he's talking about. I mean, we're talking about, he's talking about end of days kind of thing, not the biblical end of days. But I mean, you know, all this stuff starts happening underneath the shell and whatever, you know, we may be up a creek without a paddle, you know, and that's scary stuff.
I want to personally thank for Dave and Johnny, all the wonderful members that participated producing us with some questions on such a short notice. You know,
so
this whole
fast.
Thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
this whole
man.
Thing happened like in what, 7 hours?
Yeah, basically. But we ran out of time, and so we apologize for that. But thank you so much, everybody. We really appreciate it.
And we want to remind everybody to listen to our regular ATS Mix show. And if you have something that you would like to say about our one of the segments or the show in itself, you can contact us toll-free at 1-877-417-2416.
2204 and leave us a recording, and we'll try to address whatever your query or whatever the subject matter is.
Yeah. So until next time on the next special edition that we have for the AboveTopSecret.com and the Above Network LLC and ATS Mix, I'm Dave Rabbit.
And I'm Johnny Ananos. Would you take us out with a little Viva Las Vegas?
Viva! Viva Las Vegas! Vegas? Well, I wanted wages, but I could. It was between wages and, yeah. Screw it.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.AboveTopSecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat.